Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast, an exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
108.
Wow. Did y'all practice that?
No, we're just that in sync.
That was really good.
That was good.
Wow, the auspicious number 108.
Wow, wow, wee, wow.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Very special episode.
We started off with a Borat reference. Very, very. Wow, we've been together for 108 episodes.
Beautiful.
And thank you, listeners, for also being with us for 108 beautiful episodes. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, you can find us on Instagram at
Modern Yogi Podcast.
Wait, can I say something?
Yes, oh my absolutely.
God. 108 is twice 54. Yeah. We've been doing this for 2 years. Exactly.
Because 52.
There's 50, isn't it?
There are 54.
You know what's so funny is that Priya is a math teacher.
I am not currently a math teacher. I do not claim this.
52 weeks, but oh hey, we've all made.
I got excited because
you know
of 108, and I tried to divide it in two, and then I tried to make it fetch happen when it wasn't going to happen.
You tried to make fetch happen, but you couldn't make fetch happen mathematically.
That's right.
But the intention was there, and that's all that matters.
Either way, it's been 2 years.
Wow. Even more than two years. Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically 2 years of episodes. I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of episodes.
Oh, yeah, because we took a break for like a couple of months. You're right.
So it's been
like 2.5.
We usually take like a Krishnamas break.
Krishnamas break. I like it.
But it's basically 2 years, and that's a long time to be doing this, you guys.
Definitely.
And our listeners have been with us for two years.
Yeah.
That's a long time to listen to our crazy selves.
Yeah. I hope our voices, like, I hope everyone knows what everyone sounds like. I hope our voices don't annoy you.
Oh, our names. What are our names in case they don't know whose voice is who by now?
They've been with us for 2 years.
But if they don't know.
That's true. My name is Shama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And my name is Shamali. And we're the Modern Yogi Podcast.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. A recap, ladies.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We are on chapter 13. Chapter 13 has been a doozy. It's been very technical. Krishna has described the components of the field, which is the body. Mm. He's also talked about the senses, the mind, the ego, different elements, the earth, water, different qualities like desire and aversion. Mm-hmm. I think in the last episode, Krishna really gets into the details of the super soul,
right,
which is the Krishna within all of us.
Yeah.
Yes.
So sweet.
In our hearts. So Krishna describes the nature of the Supreme Being, the nature of the super soul, which is beyond the senses and is formless, yet present everywhere as the source of all existence.
Mm.
So we're getting really nitty gritty into the soul, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. And yes. I think text 19 is going to do a good job of reminding us of everything we've been listening to.
Correct. Recapping it all.
Correct. All right. The invocation, please, let is.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Priya Darshini. Right.
Chapter 13, text number 19.
Thus, the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Mm. Is that the right way of saying that word?
Summarily.
Summarily?
Yeah, that's what my copy says. Just summarily.
Okay, cool. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain my nature.
Okay.
Cool. Wait, hold on.
So I have no idea.
Summarily. That makes more sense.
Summarily.
That makes more sense. I've actually heard it that way before. All
right. Can I do it one more time?
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Summarily.
Beautiful. When you run out of things to talk about. Summarily.
Summarily. Wait, can you read that whole thing again?
Yes, I can. Okay. Thus, the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain my nature. Like the supreme nature, not the material nature.
Right. It's so interesting in Krishna consciousness how it breaks down so many things in this wisdom of the Gita. Because like when you think of knowledge, you don't think of the breakdown, but it's saying, okay, knowledge is three things. You have A, the knower, B, the knowable, which in this case is transcendental knowledge, and C, the process of knowing, which is the path of bhakti. And combined, they're all vijnana, or the science of knowledge. Very interesting.
So this verse that Priya just read is a summary of the past couple verses.
Yeah. And actually Prabhupada does break it down even further.
Yep.
So he goes, okay, so from verses 6 to 7, we start talking about, Krishna talks about analyzing the material elements. And by this, he means false ego, intelligence, senses, happiness, what's the opposite of happiness?
Distress?
Sadness?
Thank you. Distress.
That's a hard question. You know? A lot of people don't know.
No, I'm feeling the opposite of happiness, doctor. You tell me.
Well, according to my research, it seems like it's distress.
I forgot the word for a second. I just had a
that
brain
cute.
Fart.
That's okay.
Cute. Anyways. And so 6 and 7 talk about these aspects, right? And these elements that make up the material world.
Right.
And the general manifestation of the life, right? Symptoms
right.
of life. Then verses 8 through 12, it talks about the process of knowledge. And that is the understanding of both knowers of the field and activity. So namely the soul and the super soul, understanding right. the soul and the super soul. Mm. And then verses 13 through 18 describe the soul and the super soul themselves. So the previous one, 8 through 12, is how to get the process of knowledge more so. And then 13 through 18 is describing the soul specifically and the supreme soul.
So interesting. So it's almost as you were describing that, Priya, I pictured almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm. You go through the basics, going up to higher and higher elements. Cause like, okay, the first pillar would be the field of activity, our body. And like you said, the surrounding. The next pillar above is the process of understanding. And then the top pillar is the nature of the soul and super soul. So we go from like most tangible to most esoteric and intangible.
Mm, I like it. That's a good way to visualize it for sure. So yeah, that's basically nice. What I got from this verse. What, anything else you feel?
Krishna is summarizing this summary. And this verse is a summary.
Yes. You got it.
Because I feel like, you know, we've dived so much into field and body right. and super soul. And so Krishna's like, by the way, yeah. I just summarized that. And mm-hmm. so now he's saying that he just summarized it.
I like it.
Love it.
Very good.
Cool. Krishna's pretty cool.
Krishna's a pretty cool guy.
Should we do text 20, Shamasangita?
Yes. All right. Chapter 13, text 20. Krishna says, material energy and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. What did I just read? Okay, well, I'm going to start again. Material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature.
Okay.
Oh, I think this one's really interesting.
It is. It's a bit technical. So if you're listening, try not to zone out because it's interesting stuff.
Okay, I'm going to pay attention.
Should we break down the just what Shamasangita just read and then we go into explaining it?
Sure. Then dive into the purport.
Yeah. So material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. So we've talked about this a million times, right? It all has existed because we're all parts and parcel of Krishna. Like we have existed. Right. Like this world that we live in.
There's no chicken and egg.
Yeah.
The chicken has always existed and the egg has always existed.
Right. Exactly.
Nothing just became.
That's right.
Cool.
Right. So like when you said that, never mind. I'm going to move on. Okay. Okay. So always existed material nature and living entities, meaning the soul. Now the next part says their transformation. So the soul's transformation or the material nature's transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature.
Okay.
So as a soul.
Yes.
You've always been a soul.
Boom.
But the body that you have and anything that happens to you.
Right.
It is a product of material nature.
Right, right. Meaning those changes aren't inherently a part of, it's just a byproduct of the material nature. So everything else has always been there and will always continue to be there.
Yeah. And also like the soul is Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good.
I love that Priya just said the soul is the soul and Shalmi said boom. Like that was like such a poignant like boom. I was like, she had said nothing yet.
Well, you know, we all clapped when you said this is Krishna's summary of the summary, which means it's his summary. And we said, you got it, baby.
That's right.
So the soul is the soul. Boom.
Basically, we're just very supportive.
We're very supportive today. No one's making fun of each other yet, which kind of we
you tried,
are.
And then Shamley shut it down. That's what I heard.
She, you know, you're the bigger person. Out of the two of us, you're the bigger person, the more humble person.
I always had a lot of humility growing up.
Okay. So going back to what you were saying, Priya.
No. I don't know.
No, she's done.
I'm done. That was why there was a boom.
You're just like, no, I don't know. I mean, okay, so the soul has always existed, right? All of us have always existed. And then
Prabhupada says it in different words because, you know, this is a complex topic. So he says both the super soul and the individual entity are different manifestations of Krishna. And basically they fall into these categories that the living entity is in the category of Krishna's energy. So that's interesting. So Krishna's energy, we come from that. And the super soul is in the category of his personal expansion. And that's an important difference because we are not Krishna ourselves. Just because we come from Krishna doesn't mean I am God, I am Krishna. No, we come from his energy. We come from him, but we are not him.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, now I'm trying to visualize, right? Inside of our heart, right? We all have a heart. There's two little things that are inside of it, right?
Two sparks.
Two little sparks, right? One is our soul, which has always been there. But then there's this super soul, which is the little bit of Krishna inside of us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So our soul came from material.
Help me out. Is it A, his energy, or B, himself?
A, his energy. Boom. So our soul came from his energy.
Kind of like the rays of the sun.
Rays of the sun. And then that little spark inside of us, that's the second spark, which is Paramatma, which is Krishna, the super soul.
Yes.
Comes from...
Personal expansion. So it's Krishna himself.
Krishna himself.
Hiyo.
Have you ever heard the story of the Rasa dance?
Yes.
So, you know, Krishna basically wants to dance. The gopis want to dance with Krishna. Mm. And Krishna expands himself into many Krishnas so that all the gopis get a Krishna to dance with. So like the same way it's an expansion. The super soul is an expansion of Krishna. It's Krishna himself, but it's an expansion that is in every single body.
Right. Ergo, Krishna is inside our heart.
Yeah.
Like him, though.
Him. Right. Yeah. Right.
Nice. Right. So that was an important difference because we are not Krishna. We come from his energy, but we're not him. So that's why they're saying both material nature and the living entity, we're eternal, but we come from different categories. So the super soul, material energy, and us, we come from different places within Krishna. We are his energy. The super soul is him directly.
Yeah. I also understood this text to be like the part where it says there the souls or the living entities transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. I was thinking about like that picture, I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita actually, of like the body going from like being born to death, like all the transitions, right? All of those transformations are byproducts of material nature. They have nothing to do with the soul in terms of like what's actually physically happening. The soul just persists to be the same.
Absolutely. Right? That's a good one.
The like the little baby that goes into the toddler, that goes into the teenager, to the
like
old man.
All of those changes are not the soul changing. Right? Those are all material changes that are happening to the soul. So that's why I picture when I thought of like products of material nature.
Yeah, exactly.
They're transformations.
They're byproducts, but they themselves are eternal. They're not changing.
Right.
And Prabhupada repeats that again here. So because material nature and the living entity are eternal, that is to say they existed before the creation. That's interesting because even before this material world was created, material nature and the living entity, we already existed within Krishna. We either come from himself or his energy, but we're always in Krishna.
Oh my God, I thought of something I probably shouldn't say.
What?
No, you have to say it.
Okay, you know how like, well, okay, I'll say it this way. It's a better way to say it. You know how
Keep it PG.
Yeah, I'm trying. but it's just medical. You existed in your mother's womb before you existed in the sense that all women carry the eggs that will eventually be you.
Oh.
Right? So we're Krishna's our father.
We're in Krishna's ovaries. Okay, that's where
that's you said keep it PG, and that's where we went wrong.
I'm just trying to understand.
I'm just saying Krishna's our father, so we've always existed within him.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
you see, you tried to make it as something. I was being anatomically correct, and you tried to
but
do something
technically,
else.
Technically, it's right, because we've always existed inside of Krishna.
Yes, Shamasangita.
Yeah. I don't know where you're going mentally, but yep. Like what you said verbatim. Yes,
exactly what I said. Yes. Boom.
So we're in him, but then Prabhupada continues as we are continuing. Mm. He says,
like
"We are continuing." Moving along, because we are conditioned. We, even though we're already naturally connected, using that was a great connection, Priya. That we're inside him, because I added another layer. Just like kids go through the rebellious teenage phase from someone who they come from.
Yes,
we go through our quote unquote rebellious teenage phase. So because we're conditioned, Prabhupada says we're averse to serving the Supreme Lord, and thus because of that, we're not allowed to enter the spiritual sky where we have to be pure to do that. We have to elevate our consciousness, but we go through our little rebellious teenage phase when it's something actually so naturally inherently a part of us to be connected to Krishna, and we rebel against it. So then we have to come back and forth with all this material nature elevator business that we want to ultimately get out of. But it's interesting because Prabhupada writes that with coming forth the material nature, that's where we're given another chance to act in this material world and prepare ourselves to enter into the spiritual world. And that is the mystery of this material creation. So material nature is a stage where we're given an opportunity. There you go. Yeah. Look at that. Yeah.
It's kind of like when we are going through that rebellious teenage phase right now where it's like, do we want to go back to Krishna? Do we not? I mean, I kind of want to go hang out with my friends at the mall, you know? But then when you get older and you actually see your parents' age, you were like, oh my God, they were right the whole time. I should be spending more time with them, blah, 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 blah. But I feel like we're still in that phase that Maya has created for us.
Yeah, actually, Prabhupada says, those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. You know, it's like, it's a hard, tough thing. We sometimes don't see it. We get caught up and then we're struggling.
There's this notion that I heard one time a comedian say where it's like, we're all just trying to fill our heart. Like we're trying to fill a God-shaped hole in our heart with everything but God.
Yeah.
Right? And we're trying to fill it with TV and movies and relationships and like all these things that are distracting for us.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing's going to fill that hole except for God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Avoid and attachment is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're all just trying to avoid the work, like the self-work to figure out how to get back to Krishna. Because it is really about like really looking within and being like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
What is holding me back?
Oof. Because I think we avoid it because self-work is so hard.
Right.
It's like literally, like it's like the hardest thing to do. And I see why people avoid it. Yeah. But there's also then you just go into that circle of like trying to find peace and happiness in so many other things that doesn't exist there.
Right.
Yeah. I went to this retreat recently.
Oh, say more.
And it was amazing. It was really, really amazing, wonderful experience. It's just let's see, what can I say? There's so many things I could say, but one question that was asked, there were a couple of questions that were asked. There were two questions that I'm gonna mention now. One question that was asked was close your eyes and think about, you know, the spiritual world. And like, what does that look like for you? And really envision you being there happy with Krishna, right? Take a second to like really experience that. And then also remember this material world and then the experiences you've had, the people you love and all these things. And you kind of come back to your body and think about like your existence right now in this material world. And then let's say in that moment, you get Krishna looking down upon you and saying, hey, you can come with me right now, but you can't let anybody else know. You're just going to come right now. You have 3 seconds to decide. What would you say? Would you go back with Krishna in this moment? Or would you think that there's more for you to do or whatever?
You can't say bye to anybody?
No, he's 3 seconds.
I got teary-eyed.
Oh.
What would you do? And you don't have to answer, but it was like the beginning of the retreat. That was like one of the first things that was said. And it was like, really taking a time to think, oh my God, right? And then the next question, it was like another talk, but the next question that connected in my mind was, What is stopping you from going to Krishna? Like, what is it that is limiting you from doing whatever spiritual, from living the spiritual life that you want to live? Mm. Right? And like, what is getting in the way, and what can you do about it, or why haven't you done something about it yet? Mm. I'm not phrasing it perfectly.
They phrased it
so well. And I just thought, whoa, when we have to check in with ourselves like that, it really goes, what is stopping me? And what am I trying to do? And would I go to Krishna right now? Like, what are the attachments I have? And like all these questions that go inside.
Shamli, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
Are you okay, dude?
Yeah, I got teary.
After this episode, I'll give you a hug. Yeah.
No, Priya, that was such a good visual when you were saying, what would you, you have 3 seconds to decide, what would you grab and go? And it's kind of like, you know, let's say if a fire's happening, what would you grab in your room and run? Mm-hmm. But it's the same, the equivalent then for the spiritual sky. And my mind immediately just went to my parents. I just, for example, saw my dad this past weekend. I visited him. And when I was leaving Mammoth, I was like waving bye to him, and he was standing on his front porch and smiling at me. And back on the weekend, I got teary-eyed leaving him because I have so much love for both of them. And I know time passes and they'll get older and leave. So right when you described that, I was really feeling it. I was smiling. Krishna was saying, come, yes, yes, yes. And then he's like, but you can't bring anyone with you. And my heart just dropped and my mind went to my parents. And I thought, wait. And so on one hand, that made me sad to think to have to leave them when it's something that I also want so bad to go back to Krishna. So how to reconcile both of those? So it was kind of, this is my thought process. And I thought, well, then you just grab their hands and you take them with you. And my parents inspire me spiritually. So it's okay. But that was kind of just the thought process of like, I got all emotional thinking. I guess it's a beautiful thing to love people in your life so much that you don't want to let them go. But it's a sad thought also that I would have to let them
Technical question for Shyamali.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to sneak people into the spiritual world in this scenario?
Not in that moment. I think that the scriptural thing says that whatever good spiritual progress the children make, it helps the parents go back to Krishna also.
Yeah.
But I don't really know, like, for the sake of this question, the answer is no.
Okay, Priya, don't listen to Priya. I know a guy that knows a guy.
I know a guy. I mean, I think
we'll talk after.
Priya's right in the sense that technically that's not our decision. Krishna decides. Yeah. So I can't sneak them in. But you technically, or I guess both sides are there. I can grab them and walk the path with them, but then the ultimate decision is Krishna. So like, yes.
And theirs.
Right. Right. So, but you know, our goal, we want to help as many people on their journey back home, but ultimately then it's out of our control.
Mm. I love that. I know I'm going on a tangent, but I love that ideal of like walking the path with people and to go back home, because I feel like after this retreat, especially, I was like, wow, I really want to walk this path better. I want to do more. I want to like figure out more of my path and figure out my barriers, this and that.
Right.
And I was thinking like, I very, very much benefit from this podcast, from like my spiritual growth. Mm. Like it's huge for me to be able to talk about these things with you guys and keep Krishna in my mind so much more often and more deeply than I would if I was just reading the book myself or this or that. And
totally.
And how like it really is like so much more lovely to walk the path with others, you know, like to be able to do these activities with friends, like-minded people. So
yeah,
I really like that visual.
Yeah. Yeah. Along that line, my parents' spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Goswami, would always say that if we really love someone, we need to think, how can I bring these people back home? How can I take as many people with me back home? And so, yeah, maybe the technical answer is then you let go in a way. The bird flies out of its nest because we can't, give me the number for the guy, you know, but like,
I know a guy that knows a guy. We'll talk off air.
So we can't sneak them in, but you can to a certain extent walk the path with them. And if those attachments are attachment that will uplift you, then it's a gray area. It's okay to be attached to, it's natural, it's loving. You're going to be attached to those. They talk about the benefit of having loving relationships and exchanges with pure souls, or not even pure souls, devotees, people who are trying on this path. So that's also there.
Yeah. I really like doing this with you guys because it makes me feel like like it renews my faith. And sometimes I know both of you don't listen to the episodes back, but no, like,
what are you talking about?
She's crazy.
She heard it today.
Did you hear her?
She didn't listen to you. I heard you.
We're going to ignore the gaslighting on air. But anyways,
you and your personalities are going to ignore it. All right.
Anyways, so some of us re-listen to the episodes. Okay, I have a good point. It's a sweet point. And like when I listen to you guys talk on air and I'm just in my car, I'm like, oh my God, yes, I need to do this better. I need to do this better. And oh yeah, we talked about this. So this, and then it like strengthens my faith in so many ways, especially on days where I'm not feeling particularly devotional. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Right? You know what I mean? Right? And so like just listening to you guys again in the car, I was like, oh, okay, this is what I got to do because we talked about this and now I have to be held accountable to this and now I need to do this. And so like just doing that is very faith strengthening for me. And honestly, thank you, Priya, for making us do this.
Yes. Oh my God, no. This would be nothing without y'all. This is a team effort, you guys. I am so grateful to y'all. We're all grateful to each other. This is just lovely and... yeah, let's keep it going. I think that's all. Let's keep it going for as long as we can and keep learning together.
Thanks for forcing us to do this.
Oh my God, stop.
Appreciate it.
I mean, maybe she forced you.
I'm joking.
Blink if you need help.
I'm like looking straight to Karen. Anything else on any other things in your heart?
So what I wanted to say also in terms of that, it was like, these questions, right, where it's asked like what is stopping you from moving forward in your spiritual life, or these like this, we're all struggling. Actually, in this retreat, it was also like another really good moment to really have conversations where people genuinely, a lot of people are struggling with their spiritual life in one way or another, like whether it's like chanting is really hard, or like I just feel some level of disconnect even if I am chanting and I don't know how to connect deeper, or I feel like I'm not engaged in enough whatever the situation might be. Everyone, like, we can all be in this path and still be struggling, and so don't feel discouraged if that's the case. And for people who are feeling completely lost, it is part of the journey. We just gotta remember, like, just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming.
I think it does get better swimming. And find those pockets of like re-energizing association or like faith-giving moments. Like for you, the podcast, for me, it's also the podcast. For me, it's also these retreats where you get to go deeper and ask these questions and really internalize, you know, your own journey. So
I think it's also important to be real about what's keeping us from dedicating this one life to Krishna. And I think it's different reasons for different people. And I know, I don't know if we want to dive deeper into this, but I think it's important to like be self-aware and be real about what is actually keeping us from dedicating our life to Krishna. I think for me, it's like, I think it's sense gratification and, you know that word pratishtha? Am I saying it wrong?
No, I think you're saying it right.
It's like this need for recognition. I think because of comedy in that world, and I'm just like this need to be recognized as a comedian in addition to sense gratification. Those are the two things that I'm like, oh, this is so hard and so tempting. And so those are the two big ones. Yeah.
You know, I don't have all the answers, but even just hearing that, part of me thinks we've said before, there's a way to spiritualize everything. And maybe you also have this strong pull because that's your calling, you know? You have this strong pull to, you're saying recognition, but it could be also said in a different way. Everything has two sides. Like, you have a strong pull to want to be like a successful comedian, recognized in X, Y, and Z ways, but maybe also because you'll be able to make a great impact like that, kind of along the lines of how when George Harrison became a devotee, Prabhupada was like, keep doing your thing. That's how you'll be able to reach the most lives. And we've heard some of your stand-up routines where like you talk about deeper things and it's all in a gradation. It's like, even if we're not going to be cleaning the temple, you can be bringing people, like if they're in the mode of passion or ignorance, bring them to passion. If they're in passion, bring them to goodness. If they're in goodness, bring them to, like, there's all these levels, because certain people aren't ready to be brought to a temple. It's too much and it'll push them further.
True.
So you've talked about such real things in your stand-ups that will bring people higher and higher and higher. So if you have this natural calling, I'd say it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's really interesting to put it that way. And I think I need to start looking at it that way too. And even this lens of like elevating consciousness a little bit, that is a beautiful thought. I feel like I'm getting free therapy right now. Just send me an invoice. Okay?
I'll send you voice notes. Very nice. Very nice.
Invoice.
No, send me an invoice for your
She's like, yeah, I'll send you voice notes.
For your therapy services.
Oh, that too. I need to be a little more practical with them. You know, money is important to function this way. Yeah, I'll send you voice notes.
No, but that's really good. Thank you, Shawn.
She still said voice notes.
I know. I was making fun of myself.
No, thank you for that. Really, I appreciate it. Does anybody else want to air their dirty laundry on air?
Yeah. Well, can we just keep talking about you? Because that's more fun.
Okay.
This is just part of my exploration, and we don't have to, I feel like we've gone off topic a bit. So you guys can tell me to shut up at any moment, but
no,
like,
this is important. I think
when we talk about like the quote unquote ultimate goal, Krishna, and yeah. like, first, like, what is that in y'all's mind before you define what's stopping you from getting there? Cause it's like, like sometimes my brain goes to, in order to get to Krishna, I have to be a pure devotee. Like I have to be like short of a sannyasi. Like I have to be doing service all the time. Like be a temple devotee who doesn't really, you know, care about material stuff. And I'm just doing service all the time. And I'm chanting and I'm reading all the time. Like that's quote unquote what my brain goes to sometimes in an extreme thought process of like, that is the ultimate goal, isn't it not? Right. And then other times I can be more practical and see like, well, I am a grihasta.
Right.
And like, when you personally think of like this ideal place where you feel like, if you just get to this place, I know I can go back to Krishna. What does that look like for you?
Oh, interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
the first thought that came to mind, it might not be a complete answer, but just when you said what it looks like for you, and or maybe like you teeter back and forth between these two perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like this tug of war between yourself. My first thought was, for me, it's never looked like one tangible path. It's a feeling. It's a feeling we're trying to achieve. And we've read before that it says sometimes externally, what a devotee does, or a pure devotee, whatever, a pure devotee and or a devotee does, might look the same on the outside as someone who has no knowledge of Krishna, but it's about their state of internal consciousness. So for me, it never has looked like a certain lifestyle. Of course, it's all there that I want to read more and chant more. Yes, but it doesn't look exactly like one thing. It's a state of feeling that I want to achieve. So
what would that look like, that state of feeling?
Ooh.
That what does it feel like when you're in love with someone, right? That feeling of like you're constantly wanting to think of them, and your mind naturally is attracted to like when you think of them, it fills you with this feeling of.
Okay, so I have a question. I'm sorry, and this is just me being inquisitive. So tell me when to stop. Yeah. So if the goal is for you to feel like you're always thinking about them, I understand like the general idea of like feeling in love, like oh my gosh, I just can't wait to spend more time with them. I can't wait to hear more about them, like that sort of feeling, right?
Right.
How can you get there?
So I think like to answer that question where it's like, okay, what does pure devotee look like? And I think it's a matter of priority, right? A pure devotee would prioritize their rounds in the morning, and then they would try to read as much as possible, and they're not watching TV and movies and like they're just watching the Mahabharata on YouTube, like, you know what I mean, like all the things that I'm trying to do in Kartik to make up for the rest of the year. Anyways, that's neither here nor there, but like all of these things and prioritizing all of these things, whereas like I don't feel like I am, you know. And a pure devotee is prioritizing everything in their life around Krishna, their activities, their food, what they're watching, what they're consuming, how early they're waking up, how many rounds they're chanting, all of that stuff. And maybe it's like this perfection thing that we have in our heads that's like, oh my God, that's so hard. So, I mean, I'm never going to get there. That's the type of mentality that sometimes can hold us back.
And I think it's so important to verbalize or vocalize that, because I'm never going to get their mentality. I think it's a very prevalent, many people feel that.
For sure.
Because we have this very high, almost black and white view of what it looks like to be a devotee. And actually, can I share a quick thing in a way to answer your question? Because this is such an important topic. And we spoke about this yesterday. My mom and I have on Tuesdays a weekly little sage group, and we spoke about this one topic. The overarching topic was how to talk about bhakti in a way that doesn't freak out those people that you love around you. Because most people that they love aren't devotees or aren't on this path.
Yeah.
So my mom gave a really nice example that of her spiritual master that I think is fitting now. I think TKG went, and he was, you know, for those who don't know, a very personal disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who this is, you know, the book as it is from Srila Prabhupada's, not perspective, how would you say?
Translation.
Yeah. So TKG maybe in the beginning phases, like most people on their spiritual path, he maybe saw things a little more rigidly or a little more black and white, but a lot changed when he went to Cambridge to study, because his vision to go to college was to start reaching more academic crowds. So he thought like, okay, that'll take my preaching to the next level. So when he went to college, a lot of his perspectives on maybe people who are not devotees or certain things started shifting. And he talked a lot about it in his later on years on a lot of the classes he gave. And he started seeing it's all about making friendships. And he would sometimes invite, like, I think the dean of education, all these things, all these high up positions in the school, they became very close to him. And he started inviting them, like if there was a big football game that he knew they enjoyed, he would invite them to his personal quarters where he stayed in the temple, and he would cook an awesome feast and have a TV set up so they could watch the game, feel comfortable, make connections. And he wouldn't bring up Krishna, not once. It was just all about making friends. And little by little then, through that friendship, some of these very elevated in the academic realm personalities became devotees. So for me, it kind of connects. I don't know if the connection is obvious, but in my mind, that connects to what a devotee looks like, because TKG on his own wouldn't sit there and watch the Sunday football game or the Super Bowl or whatever. But his heart internally, it's about what are your intentions? He was thinking of preaching, of bringing these people closer to Krishna and doing things that maybe in his earlier years he wouldn't do. And he even towards the end of his life told some of his disciples, don't listen to my classes before this certain year, because he felt he went through his own spiritual transformation. Now, I think it's important sometimes when people are in certain phases of their life, we put these boundaries because it protects us. So we might see this is spiritual, that is not, like in a way that more, that dichotomy, that black and white version. Mm-hmm. But the more we go through our own evolution, which, you know, if you're in the movement for a while, you see the elders who are ahead of you in the path go through their own transformation. So almost like, you know, I know Priya, we've seen so many different types of people walking the path. So you can in a way learn a lot yourself, even if I haven't maybe gone through my own certain transformations, or I'm way younger in life. I've seen those go through that. And a lot of times it takes that form of stuff become less rigid, less black and white, more there's room for so much more. And what it looks like to be a devotee, which is your original question, becomes a little bit different, you know?
Well, I don't know if it's what it looks like to be a devotee, but what does it look like to be the kind of devotee that goes back to Krishna specifically? Ooh. Because it's like, I can live with the kind of devotee that I am on most days, but that right. kind of devotee that I am is not what Shama, what was the word you use? I really like that word and I was going to write it down and I forgot it. Prioritizing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is not that kind of devotee that I am. It's not prioritizing Krishna above myself consistently enough mm-hmm. to make a change in my relationship with him. Because actually I have a little bit of both. I grew up mostly in the emotional relationship with Krishna. Like right. I've always loved Krishna. I love Krishna consciousness. I love Krishna's devotees. And it's been in me my whole life because that's how I was raised. It was a very love-centric relationship. It wasn't so much a rule-centric relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And so like when you're saying like, yeah, it's a feeling, I can understand what you're saying. And then also the practical side of me thinks, but that feeling is achieved through a method.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely.
And so like, what is that like ultimate vision? Because if we like to be able to see the goal means that we can work our small steps to getting right. there. And so that's why I really, really liked your thought process of prioritizing Krishna on a everyday basis. I feel like that's ways of making those steps yeah. right. towards developing that relationship, right? But
you know what's kind of cool, Priya, is that you might have also just cracked the code of like how to be a pure devotee by not even trying, right? Because like there are some devotees that follow all the rituals and all the rules and do everything,
right.
but they cannot find that love in their heart, right? And I think that is the whole point of the whole game, right? That is the only way to get Krishna, right? That is the only way that Krishna cares, right? Is that love part. So I think obviously it has to be a balance between those two things, but don't forget the gem that you've already created. Yeah. Right?
Well, here's the thing. My brain is very fascinating place to live. But what I mean is also you can love someone and they don't know.
Right.
Like I can love Krishna and not be showing Krishna that I love him. Mm. Right. Like how much effort am I putting in this relationship? Like I can love a friend who lives 5,000 miles away and think, oh my God, I love them so much, but I never interact with them.
You never
and
send
I don't
them
call
them. Mail.
I don't send them mail. I don't really know what they're up to. What kind of relationship is that? Just because I love them doesn't mean I'm proactively putting the effort to create that relationship and make it really strong.
Right.
And I think that's what I'm trying to decipher, right? Like I love Krishna. Yes. But do I show him enough? Or like, do I even like actually practically put it into, you know, like make it seen.
Make it priority. Yeah. Right. Make it seen. Yeah.
Well, I think that's where then we love equations, right? On the podcast, I think, but all the components are necessary. So like Shama said, you have the feeling that's been very natural and you can't teach that. That's harder to teach. So that's the gem. Mm-hmm. And then you're also talking about something that's important, the practical application. Cause yeah, if you're in a relationship and you never put effort, I don't know how long that relationship would last. I love you, baby. I love you. And then never see you. Okay.
What's love plus effort equals?
Plus prioritizing, which was a nice word you
very
used.
Very nice.
Yes. So we're formulating this equation here. Love plus
effort plus prioritization.
I'm write that down.
Equals. Right. Equals.
God.
Bhakti yoga, guys.
Bhakti yoga.
I was about to say like taking the steps back home or
That's better. That's good. Okay.
Wow,
love
thanks.
Plus
effort.
Effort plus prioritization
equals
taking the steps back home,
aka bhakti yoga.
Ayo.
Ayo. Team effort. There
we need
go.
To trademark that.
I think Priya, with the whole story I was saying of TKG, I was maybe answering a different question. I wasn't 100%.
100%.
That's a separate thing. Like, just like it's about your intention. Oh, I keep bumping my chin.
Move
Sorry.
It out more in the future, but it's okay.
It's about the intention that you have. So like when you were saying, what does it look like? It was like a literal, like, what does it look like? So I was thinking, oh, so for someone like on that level, all of their mind and heart is about Krishna consciousness. So even if he's watching the Super Bowl on a Sunday, his intention is
for
to bring
sure.
them home. But that was a little bit of a different topic.
No, but I totally think it's really useful and it's a really nice story for anyone to like see different aspects of devotees in Krishna consciousness. Super great. I do want to know more about the practical, what does it practically look like for people, just for my own understanding and also to give myself a little grace because I can't be so black and white and say like, I'm not doing enough and you know, and so just, it's curiosity.
Give yourself a little grace. Okay.
But that's maybe Krishna saying, both Priya and I, for those who aren't watching, keep bumping our chins on the mic, like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And Krishna's like, stop overthinking. It's okay.
I'm literally saying stop overthinking.
I think it might be time to wrap it up then.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else on this verse before we wrap up?
What verse were we talking about?
No, it actually makes sense, right? These transformations are the products of material nature. And Prabhupada says like in the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit of all of us.
Yeah. Everyone. Yeah.
All right. Oh. So please join us next time for chapter 13, text number 21.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.